Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. It's the best known little stretch of roadway in central Ohio. After all, it's mentioned in nearly every traffic report on radio and television, often to say it's backed up. Of course, it's the 70-71 split. The split is the primary way for cars and trucks traveling across Ohio to get through Columbus. And it's one of the main ways downtown workers get to and from the office every day. Just about everyone agrees it is overdue for an overhaul. Today on All Sides, we'll take a look at the plans to fix the split and what neighbors like and don't like about it. Joining us on All Sides is Leslie Montgomery. She is the Ohio Department of Transportation's I-7071 Project Manager. Leslie, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
Also with us is Tom Hibbard. He's an ODOT consultant and project engineer. Tom, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
Leslie, let's start with you. This project has been a long time in the making. It's seen several changes. Let's sort of reset things. What is the basic concept behind this project? What's your goal?
Our main goal is to provide modern, safe highways. First and foremost, though, this project's about safety. ODOT's highway safety program consistently ranks the East Interbelt in the top five crash hotspot locations nationwide. I'm sorry, statewide. Uh-huh. And we would like to basically get out there and fix what's wrong with the split.
So the primary is it was built in the 1950s. Obviously, there are many fewer cars and trucks on the road than there are now.
It's congestion is one of the main accident problems out there. The other problem is, you know, if you're on 71, you're in the left lane, you're in the right lane, you've got to get back in the left lane. And there's only one through lane on 71. So this project will come in and we'll give you three continuous lanes and you'll be able to actually stay in your lane all the way through Columbus. Mm-hmm. Another one of the problems we have there is the weave movements. You know, a lot of times you enter the highway on the left, you come across the lanes and you exit on the right and vice versa all throughout there. So we're going to get rid of those. And the ramps are very closely spaced. Today, when we build interstates, we build them 1.5 to 2 miles apart. There are ramps down there that are 0.5 mile apart. So we're going to consolidate and relocate those. And we're going to give you better ramp on ramps. You know, sometimes now you get on at Main or you get on at Second and you've got a really close merge. We're going to take the curves, make the curves a lot less tight. Mm-hmm. And give you just a safe, modern highway.
It'd be less fun to drive through there, though, right?
Very much less exciting. Less adrenaline.
When these highways were, I think you've seen this in a lot of cities, when these highways were designed back in the 50s, every neighborhood wanted a ramp. And transportation engineers now see that's not the best way to help traffic flow and to keep things safe.
Right. The ramp spacings, actually, when we first came up with our alternative for this, we were going to have even fewer ramps than we have today. We were going to eliminate the Broad Street and the Main Street ramps. The community came back and they said, that's just too much. We do need those Main Street ramps. So we were able to reincorporate those. But yes, the ramp spacing is an issue.
Now, this started back in 2002 at the idea phase. And there were a lot of ideas, including one to actually bury the whole thing, to do like a big dig like they did in Boston. They took that expressway and put it underground. That was one of the ideas. There were several other ideas. The idea that was settled on was sort of to improve the highway, make it a little less access, and to also increase traffic flow on the side streets. Is that basically where we are right now? We're trying to do that?
Right. When we consolidate ramps, we do need to provide roads on the surface street to feed the new ramps because we're changing the traffic patterns down there. So we've got one-way urban avenues that are going to be connecting up the new ramps. You had talked about at one point we had talked about capping the whole freeway. Neighborhood connectivity is very important down there. Back in the 50s and 60s when the highway was built, it separated neighborhoods from the downtown. And when we first started in the study phase of the project, we heard a lot of that from the downtown neighborhoods, and that's where the tunneling idea came in, to try to reconnect the neighborhoods and seal up the whole interstate. Mm-hmm. It turned out it was pretty cost prohibitive, though. Mm-hmm. So now we've come up. We actually still have a residual to that in the plan. We still plan to use the structures to try to reconnect the neighborhoods, and we're going to provide infrastructure so that each crossing over the interstate can be retrofitted to have a 100-foot cap on either side of it. With just if a developer would come in, he could just put the beams and the deck on and be good to go.
How much? Let's start with the original dream plan, which was to cap the whole thing. How much more would that have been than what we're looking at right now, Tom?
Yeah, that was about 2.5 times the cost. You know, back when we first looked at that, of what we currently have. So that you know, for this first section, first three sections, we're looking at about $600 million. So today's dollars. That would probably be costing 2.5 times that. So.
And I mean, some people might say, look, we only do this once every 50 years. It might be worth the investment to do that. And why not try to cap the whole thing? Why was that plan scrapped? I mean, looking 50 years out, if that's the solution for this eyesore right now that separates the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a couple issues. First of all, just the the cost itself was just an order of magnitude beyond what funding availability would project ahead. The second issue was long-term maintenance. You know, when you cover something like that, you have to be more concerned about security and fire protection and ongoing maintenance of that. It's much more than what our current plan proposes, which is, as Leslie indicated, the bridges with the expanded crossings and caps.
292-8513. We'd like you to join our conversation. 292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do you drive the split frequently, every day perhaps? Do you live in one of these neighborhoods that's affected directly, whether it be German Village or the neighborhoods east of downtown? 292-8513. We'd like to hear from you. The number of caps has been cut, though. Where are we on the full-blown caps like we have over 670 in the Short North? That was the goal, was to have those types of things at several points in this project, right?
Yes. We started out with the idea of capping over the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Then in about 2006, when we realized we just wouldn't be able to get the funding to do the project, so the project was in jeopardy from this kind of an expenditure, we had the idea to move forward with something similar to what happened on 670, where maybe the state came in and would build some infrastructure, some decking, maybe 100 feet on either side of some of the major crossings. I don't know that it was ever planned at some of the minor crossings. Mm-hmm. But we had MSI Design, urban planners, come in and look at where this would be appropriate and kind of came up with a vision plan that was shown in 2006 of if we could find some public-private development cooperation, what would be appropriate in the different neighborhoods. And I believe the big plaza caps were shown at High Street, Third.
Right.
Long. Mm-hmm. Was Broad ever a plaza cap?
No, I think that was planned as a gateway bridge there, for a grand entrance kind of feature for the city of Columbus, because Broad and Main are two main traditional streets coming into downtown.
Okay, so we're looking at High Street to German Village would have been one cap. Spring, you said? Or
Long.
Long. Mm-hmm. And then
Third. Right. I think it was Third, yes.
Right. And how many caps are now on the drawing board? Or decking in anticipation of a cap?
Well, Long Street is in Project 1, which we're going to move forward with in 2012. And it has a cap on the south side of the structure that will be large enough. It'll be actually a little bit larger than Union Station, so it'll function a little bit freer for the contractor. And
right now
we're going to put landscaping on it. It'll be a public space, possibly a platform where later artists could exhibit or some kind of social gatherings could take place. Mm-hmm. But in the future, it's going to be designed so it can sustain a building.
Mm-hmm. So, similar to the shops that we see over the Short North cap over 670. So German Village and the High Street cap and the Third Street cap, are they still a possibility or are they just cost prohibitive at this point?
They're absolutely still a possibility. The funding isn't identified, and that's always, a hurdle. But they're still possible.
Are you planning, as you design those components of the project, are you planning the infrastructure so it will sustain that kind of thing? Even if you don't do it right away, maybe 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road.
Yes, we are. We had talked all through the project about different alternatives. There was a suggestion early on that we just build more decks but not put anything on them. But then the thinking was, what if the funding never came and then we just have all these big concrete spaces awaiting development? Mm-hmm. So we've decided to narrow some of it in but make it really beautiful. So when we walk away from this project, it'll be something beautiful, but it also will have, as I said, the retaining walls that can be capped at a future date.
We're talking about the I-70-71 reconstruction project, which begins next year. That's the latest, 2011, right?
Yes. 2012.
Okay, so it's a year, fiscal year 2012, or when do we start?
Fiscal year 2012, we hope to select a consultant in May, a design build team. You know, this is an innovative kind of contracting where the contract is sold to a designer who works with a contractor, so the design and the construction happen just with a small lag between mm-hmm. them. So I think you will see equipment on the road in calendar year 2012, but we will sell it in calendar 11.
Okay. So people will start to see those orange barrels in 2012.
Yes.
Spring
mm-hmm.
of 2012, yes. Construction season. Okay. 292-8513 if you'd like to jump in the conversation. If you're driving on the split, please, well, don't drive. Don't call while you're driving. But if you drive the split often or you live in one of these neighborhoods, please give us a call, 292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. These urban avenues, as they're being called, what are they going to look like?
They are one-way streets. We've got a northbound and a southbound one-way street that go from about Main to Spring Street, Elijah Pierce Avenue, and Lester Drive. They will be complete streets, which means that they will accommodate all users of all ability types and all modes of transportation. They will have sidewalks. The sidewalks will be wide and will have curb ramps where parking is so that pedestrians can cross at their narrowest points. There will be bike lanes on all the urban avenues and almost all of the crossings, so there will be bike lane connectivity throughout the project. The urban avenues will be landscaped. We're going to have trees on both sides of the urban avenues where we can fit them, and where we can't, they'll at least be on one side.
I think the concern is the one-way. One-way. You know, a lot of people see one way and they see basically a highway, because that's what a highway is, two one-way streets separated by a median. Why a one-way street for these urban avenues? Tom?
Well, actually, we're able to make the streets narrower using one-way streets because we don't need left turn lanes at intersections. So that makes for safer pedestrian crossings. You know, we don't have as much difficulty with the bicyclists going through. It makes it a much more friendly environment for the pedestrians and bike riders. The lanes are now narrower than what we had originally proposed. You know, we're down to, you know, normally a lane would be 12 foot wide. Now we're down to 11.
Mm-hmm. Some people have called these basically on-ramps. What's your response to that? These are highway on and off ramps, not surface streets. Leslie?
These are not on and off ramps. They are signalized intersections. As soon as you get to the top of the actual ramp, you will be at a traffic signal. Currently, what's out there are ramps to and from the highway that allow continuous right turns. These will all be eliminated, so all traffic will stop at the top of each ramp, and at every pedestrian crosswalk, traffic will come to a full stop, and then traffic will proceed block by block through signalized intersections. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be traffic that travels at a controlled low rate of speed.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to the bottom line. How much is this going to cost? Do we have a figure yet? And went from complete, when this is start to finish, completely done?
The first three projects are currently moving forward into the design phase. Mm-hmm. And I believe
$640 million is the grand total for the first three phases of the project.
Which 640 is total, not six, each.
Correct. 640 total for all three of these projects that we're planning right now.
Okay. I've read a $1.6 billion figure in the past. Is that because the project has been scaled back?
That's for all six phases of the project.
Okay.
We have three phases that are moving forward currently.
Okay. So there are six phases, and when this is completely done, when will this completely be done? When will we have a brand new highway and no more having to weave and no more orange barrels to worry about? What's the target date for the complete finish?
Well, the last project is supposed to sell in 2024. That would be the project that contains the 315, 71, 70 piece out on the west side. Mm-hmm. So that would finish up in about 2028 if all the funding worked out the way we hope it will.
Okay. And then from 2012 to 2028, we're talking about $1.6, $1.7 billion.
Yes.
Okay. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to some neighborhood leaders who have some concerns about this project, and we'll get their views on this project as we talk about the I-70-71 split when All Sides continues on WOSU NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. At 1 o'clock, On Point will be here with a discussion of a hot future. A new study out of Stanford says we're in for years of much more intense heat in this country. That discussion at 1 on Point.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Currently 79 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:22 this morning. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 92 degrees. There is a slight chance of rain tonight, otherwise partly cloudy, a low right around 70. For tomorrow, there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms and cloudy skies with a high of 90 degrees. Looking ahead to Saturday, a slight chance of rain, cloudy skies for Saturday and a high of 90. All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about the reconstruction of the I-70-71 split. It's a generation-long project from 2012, roughly, to 2028. But when it's all said and done, hopefully it will make driving through the split easier and safer. And the hope is we'll improve the look of the split, which was built back in the 1950s. Joining us now are a couple of neighbors who have a vested interest in this project. Charles Moore, he's from the Old Town East Neighborhood Association. Charles, welcome to All Sides. And Bill Curlis, he is from the German Village Society to the south of the split. Bill, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for inviting me.
Chuck, we'll start with you. What's your biggest concern right now? If you had to pick one, what's your biggest concern with this project?
Well, our biggest concern, I think, would be that the project is being put forth as a phased project. So phase one, which is up around Long and Spring, the interchange is phase one. We're phase three, but we're just south of that. We're the connecting portion. But decisions that are being made as part of phase one have a strong impact upon phase three. Just for example, the number of lanes that are going to be coming out of phase one, we're going to have to be able to handle those lanes in phase three. Now, phase three is where the pinch points come. It narrow, low clearances, historic neighborhoods on either side. And so our concern is that we're going to have too many lanes of traffic coming down there, too much canyon, and not be able to get the complete streets implementations up at the neighborhood level.
So your concern is the highway itself is going to be too wide. Or are you talking about the surface streets?
Yeah, we need more room than is there to do complete streets, which is a federal requirement as I understand it, and put the number of lanes that they plan to put through. My estimation is that they need to drop two lanes in order to get implemented what needs to be implemented. But when phase one is approved at six lanes, then we're stuck with it.
All right. Well, I guess we'll go for one concern at a time. Leslie, what's ODOT's answer to that? Can you deal with fewer lanes, two less lanes?
We cannot deal with two fewer lanes. The level of traffic that comes through there now needs all of the lanes that are coming in. And it's not just even a matter of congestion. It's a matter of the lane continuity. We really want to provide those continuous lanes of 71 so that you can stay in your own lane. And also, we did discuss, could we narrow the freeway during the the three-quarters of a mile about of the choke point that Dr. Moore refers to. However, when you do this, you introduce extra vehicle conflict because all the people merging from the into the new lane, and then everybody jockeys for position, and you get vehicle conflict and crashes.
Bill Curlis from German Village, what is your big concern if you had to pick one?
All of our concerns are about the fix that ODOT has proposed with these, what they're calling urban highways and we're calling above ground freeways. The noise, the pollution, the interweaving of traffic, the congestion is all being taken out of the ditch and being brought to the surface level in and making Mound, Fulton, and Lester, Parsons Avenue, these connector roads, into above ground freeway entrance and exit ramps. And that's going to further separate the neighborhoods from the downtown, causing even more separation. What we have to remember is back 50 years ago, German Village was created as a result of the 50 build of the 7071 freeway, and it disconnected the German Village as well as all of the other neighborhoods from the downtown. We were looking to see this project as a fix for that. And these above-ground freeways are now going to cause another 4 to 6 lanes doubled between us and the downtown.
So what would you like to see done?
Well, it's too late now to change, I think, the solution that ODOT has come up with. What we wanted, obviously, were things that were going to cover over the freeway and solve the problems down in the ditch and cover over the freeway. Too expensive and probably too impractical. So what we're now looking at are all the ways that we can mitigate all of these unintended consequences by bringing this above ground. Our solutions, we're looking for the creativity from the engineers to come up with some innovative ideas and not just putting out their streets with intersections and traffic lights and heavy truck traffic and tens of thousands of cars above ground.
Leslie, you mentioned that you're putting trees and bike lanes and crosswalks and lights. Can you do more to make these streets a little more user-friendly to the neighborhood?
What we've done, the first thing we did to try to mitigate this, what you've got is, as Dr. Moore says, you've got a historic neighborhood on both sides. So you've really got a limited resource there in the land. The first thing we did was build a retaining wall. What's out there currently is I-71 and then up above it, the city streets with grassy slope between them. We've turned that into a wall so that we can use every foot of width that we have for either freeway or urban avenue. We feel that the efficiency of the one-way streets on Mound Fulton has enabled them to stay narrow. They're not getting any wider, and we are going to really meter the flow with these traffic signals through there. So we think it'll be safe and orderly and accommodate pedestrians in a much safer manner than what's out there today.
Bill, would you rather see them two-way streets? Is that basically one of your points?
See, that's the problem. You're asking a volunteer who is not an engineer to solve a traffic problem.
Yeah.
And that's why I say we're looking for the creativity from to see what other communities have done, where are these same problems. ODOT continually points to, I forget the name of the district down in Cincinnati, as their solution, that highway system that's right outside the baseball and football stadiums down there.
7175.
Fort Washington.
Right.
And that is being viewed as the epitome of what we would want to try up here in Columbus, and we don't like that. What it is a concrete jungle covered over with some pretty pots and things like that. And it isn't all about the bridges. It's about that connector distributor roadway that is going to put thousands of cars above ground, bringing all of those problems. We just had ODOT just released a sound study a couple of weeks ago, that what their projections are. And again, I'm not an engineer, so these numbers don't mean too much to me, except that 66 decibels is the point at which conversation becomes troubled by the surrounding noise. They're saying that projections are for the 70-71 split in the north first phase is going to be in the high 70s to low 70s range. So those kinds of problems need some creative solutions to mitigate that that adverse effect. And that's what we're looking for. I'm not the person to ask what the solution is. I'm not an engineer.
292-8513, if you'd like to join in our discussion, 292-8513. Let's go to a call. Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, this is Ann Twiggs. And I just wanted to comment and say I'm just wondering why we are allowing ourselves all the time to be limited to traditional solutions. one of the things, for example, if we need access roads, why can't they be cantilevered over the interstate? That sort of thing. Also, there's lots of other examples, like we've mentioned before. For example, in Dallas, they just built a five-acre park over a freeway. And I just think that we keep saying that it's money, 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 but the ODOT didn't even have a budget when they started designing. They designed it, and then they came up with a budget. Why can't we do a new design and come up with a new budget?
Okay, thanks for the call in. Leslie, I'll direct that one at you.
Well, resources are limited, and we have a vast system in the state of Ohio, and we have to make these tough choices to make sure that all communities are being treated equally and that we can spread our resources all the way as far as they need to go. You know, our system was built in the 50s and the 60s, and we have a lot of maintenance needs. We have a lot of pressures on the system, and we can't necessarily spend. It comes down to economics. Did that Texas park, did that cost $100 million? I read about that in a magazine. It was very costly, whatever it was.
Yes, it was.
And I don't know that we have $100 million to do that here. I know ODOT doesn't.
292-8513, if you'd like to jump on board and talk about the I-70-71 split. Leslie Montgomery from ODOT, the 70-71 project manager. I mean, you have to balance between the safety of the traffic using the highway and the concerns of the neighborhood, which the criticism we've gotten from one engineer we talked to is that this project leans more towards the convenience of the traveling highway traffic. The cars and trucks who use 70 and 71, and it's not going to help downtown or the neighborhoods as much as it could.
Well, this project really isn't about convenience for the traveling public. It really is about safety, and we do want vehicles to be safer. We also want pedestrians to be safer up top. Getting rid of the continuous right turns onto and off of the ramp is something that we've done to make sure that the pedestrians are safe as well as the vehicles. The most efficient configuration is to just allow those free flow lanes, to build more of them, and just get the traffic on and off as quickly as possible. But we haven't done that. We've tried to balance the pedestrians with the traffic and with the bicyclers and come up with a solution that's the best for everybody.
Okay. Chuck Moore, any other besides the what you mentioned about you want more lanes on the split? What are your other concerns in the Old Town East neighborhood?
I think I said less lanes.
Less lanes. More lanes. Sorry about that.
Along with that, I'm not quite sure who it was that wanted this Main Street exit. We don't want it. Mm-hmm. The exit lane takes up 12 feet or something like that. And then there also is a concrete divider wall that takes up another 15 feet. So, we would go a long way towards alleviating our concerns if they just got rid of that exit there. And we'd save the taxpayers, I think, a chunk of money as well. But this tends not to be being discussed because we're thinking about phase one and this is phase two. Three, but once you start that exit lane up in phase one, it has to be there.
Bill and Chuck, I mean, the criticism that has been levied at neighborhood associations like yours is that this is a big picture project. This serves all of Central Ohio. It serves all of Ohio, the traveling public that goes through the split. And basically, the criticism is this is a not in my backyard argument that you are making. How do you respond to that?
It's absolutely not about that. It's what it's about is trying to reconnect the downtown to our neighborhoods, to affect the quality of life issues of the noise pollution and all of the traffic issues that are coming into the downtown. It's also about the connectivity of German Village specifically to the rest of the city. German Village is the number one tourist destination in Central Ohio. Experience Columbus and the Chamber tout German Village as part of the reason to bring your convention to Columbus. How you get there and how you continue to make our businesses viable so that if you want to come down to have lunch at Katzinger's or go to dinner at Lindy's or Barcelona, you can still get there. So those are our concerns. We know and recognize that there has to be changes to the freeway and the ditch. It's a dangerous situation. It's the solution, and we're looking for some creative solutions to keep us connected to the rest of the downtown and to the rest of the state of Ohio.
Okay. An email from John. He writes, you, mainly me, started off by saying everyone agrees the split needs to be fixed. He says, not so. ODOT could solve the main problem, the congestion problem, if they use the $1.7 billion to build a regional light rail network. Why not our light rail network as a part of this project? Now, I know, Leslie, you are the project manager for this project. You're not the head of ODOT, but you want to take a stab at light rail and how this project fits into the overall mix of transportation in Central Ohio?
Thank you for qualifying. I'm the project manager on this project. This project has taken into consideration the Columbus Light Rail plans. We have at Broad Street, we are going to reinforce the structure so that it can handle light rail over 71 and also High Street over 70. We worked with COTA to help bring in their express buses in an efficient way, and we will provide bus pads for them. We are improving the connector between what would be the 3C rail station and the airport during this project. So we are trying to look at connectivity in different modes.
292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? My thought on this is just do away with the whole inner city freeway system altogether. Do like some other countries have done in major cities where they've had a congestion problem, to where they do have light rail and they do have busing in there. Just take it completely out. You know, you have 270 going around the city. You could build roads like High Street and Broad Street leading into the downtown area. You take that all out, and that would connect the downtown and all the outlying areas together, plus probably be a lot less money. Plus, we have bus service, and like the other gentleman said, light rail in downtown.
Okay.
Because, you know, London has done that. Greece has done that. You know, London has a pretty high tax for you to drive your vehicle into London now. You know, build our inner transportation through busing, light rail, and, you know, other means. And that would be more than enough in 270. The people can go around and get off at that area and then drive in. And even from 270, the farthest you're away from downtown is maybe 10 minutes.
Okay. Let's get a response from our panel. Leslie from ODOT.
Well, the Department of Transportation actually does have different divisions that deal with rail, aviation. We are committed to transforming Ohio's vast road, rail, transit, maritime, bicycle, pedestrian assets into a safe, fully integrated, state-of-the-art network. We really do look at how these are all going to fit in. Eventually, I'm not sure we can get to where the caller was going, but we are looking at taking steps toward that direction.
Chuck Moore from Old Town East. The highway serves a vital role for your neighborhood, even though you may not like what it has done to your neighborhood. It certainly helps the residents get to and from work and wherever they have to go. Would you agree? Would you like to see the highway go away completely, as
well,
Tom suggests?
Well, I was going to suggest that the caller should probably run for governor.
Okay.
but I'll be honest with you. I'm 70 years old now, and I don't take that freeway very much. I am an engineer, and I know the risks that are involved. And if it's at all – like coming up here, I came from the Near East Side up to here. I did not get on a freeway anywhere. I got here on time. I believe our ODOT people took a freeway and they were almost late. So
we can't confirm that.
And so I think we accept the fact that the freeway is not going to be something that you hop on to go four or five blocks and then hop back off again, certainly in the future, but I think we also realize that it's probably not a very good alternative now for short trips.
You mentioned your age, so I won't have to, I don't feel bad asking you this question. Is Tom's idea any less radical than the whole idea of building freeways through cities was back in the 1940s?
No, I don't think it's a radical idea. But if you look at the situation on the freeway, if traffic increases on the freeway, mm-hmm. I know this sounds strange, but it will slow down. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you'll reach a point where you're going to have gridlock on that freeway, mm-hmm. and then your accident rate is going to go to zero. So it's going to take time to implement the kind of ideas that the caller had, yeah. but maybe we could buy time by just letting the freeway slow itself down.
All right. It's we are talking about the I-70/71 split reconstruction project, a huge project, a very expensive project, and will impact the city of Columbus and Central Ohio for decades to come. We'll continue our conversation when we return on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media presents a special Chefs in the City coffee tasting at Luck Brothers Coffee House in Grandview, Thursday, July 29th at 10:30 a.m. Join us to sample gourmet coffees, treats prepared by our featured chef, Brian Pollock of Deepwood Restaurant, and get a rare coffee take-home from Luck Brothers. You'll also be a part of a special WOSU TV production and learn how to brew the perfect cup of coffee. A limited number of tickets are on sale now. Get more information and reserve your tickets at wosu.org/chefs.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and we'll hear about government concerns over hydraulic fracturing, extracting natural gas from shale formations. That discussion begins at 11, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on WOSU comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher education faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at ohea.org.
Currently 79 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:42. Sunny skies today and a high of 92 degrees. A chance of showers tonight, just a slight chance, otherwise partly cloudy, a low of 70. There is a good chance of rain for tomorrow, cloudy skies and a high of 90 degrees. And looking ahead to Saturday, a slight chance of rain, cloudy skies and a high of 90. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson filling in for Ann today. We are joined by Leslie Montgomery. She is with ODOT. She's the 7071 project manager. Tom Hibbert, he's an ODOT consultant and engineer, helping us with some of the details of the project and the traffic engineering theories. Also, Bill Curlis from the German Village Society and Chuck Moore from the Old Town East Neighborhood Association. Obviously, those two folks are neighbors of this project and very concerned about what is going to happen, what the plans are. Let's go back to the phones. And Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, of the $1.5 billion, how much of it is federal and how much of it is state?
All right. Leslie is digging through her papers to get the exact percentages here.
Oh boy, I don't have it in percentages. Mm-hmm. It looks like, though, we are at about between 80 and 90% federal participation, about... I'm going to say 5% ODOT, 100% state funds, and 1% local funds. We're in that ballpark. Sorry, I can't convert to percentages.
So most of the money is coming from the federal government.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
So essentially, it's Chinese money building the split.
You mean Chinese loans helping pay for this thing?
Yes, and we should have signs in English and Chinese thanking them for the $1.5 billion.
Well, I assume the Chinese want us to pay it back.
Indeed.
With interest, I'm sure, as well. So, but your point is well taken. Anything else, Steve?
That's it.
Thank you for the call. 292-8513, 292-8513. Let's go to line four. And Emily, you're on the air. Go ahead, Emily.
Oh, hi. I'm Emily. I live in one of the Near East area neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and we already feel disconnected from downtown, and I would like an explanation of how these additional lanes help bring the connectivity that ODOT keeps explaining or saying.
Mm-hmm. That was what Chuck's point was earlier. What the comments I've heard, I guess the comment that sort of struck me the most was, we want to fix the mistakes we made 50 years ago. Can this project do this, Leslie?
Well, we are working on neighborhood connectivity, focusing on the structures, the connections between the communities and the downtown. Currently, we have $26 million that has been raised through Mid-Ohio Regional Planning, ODOT, and the City of Columbus to improve these crossings. Not all of them will be the big plaza caps, but they will be wider. They have wider sidewalks. Life's lived on foot. They have great pedestrian accommodations. And they will be capable of sustaining caps in the future when funding is available. You know, we always have the trade-off between finances and aesthetics and what we can accomplish with limited resources.
I know in other areas of the country they sell air rights over highways. Is that something that ODOT does to hotels? And this is mainly in the bigger cities where land is at a premium. They'll sell the air rights over a highway and they'll build a hotel or a supermarket or something like that over the highway.
If they want to call us, we're listening.
Yeah, I think the like, for instance, the cap over I-670, there was arrangements made over that, similar. It wasn't an air rights. I think there was legal leasing arrangements that were made between ODOT, the city, and ultimately the developer that worked or that developed the property there.
292-8513. If you'd like to join in our conversation, we're talking about the I-70-71 split. Lisa has a question. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, who uses the split anymore? I can see before 270 was built that everybody who wanted to get from one of the freeways to the other had to use it. But if you are going north to south or east to west, you take the outer belt, and the outer belt is great, and we've put a lot of money into it, and it's got lots of lanes. Who really uses this thing to spend all the money to do it?
Tom Hibbert, ODOT consultant, you have some figures on who's using this road?
Yeah, actually most of the traffic that's going through on either of those freeways actually do use the freeway rather than using the outer belt. Only about 30% of that traffic is truly through traffic. 70% of the traffic we have down on the split today is traffic that is either starting from or ending somewhere within the outer belt right now.
I have figures that I-70 was built to hold a capacity of 120,000 vehicles. I assume that's per day. And now it's 144,000 cars and trucks using the split. So it's significantly more. It's not double by any means. 670 was improved just to the north of the split, and now you can connect all the way from the airport to I-70 in the west outer belt via highway. How has that helped, and how has that changed what ODOT is planning for the reconstruction of the split?
Well, that the improved 670 was taken into account when we first put our plans together and some of our original concepts. In fact, we looked to see if we could even just reroute traffic on 315 and 670. Unfortunately, the volumes that we're projecting and forecasting in the future are so much that we had to make the improvements down in the freeway itself and to improve the safety of the corridor as well, which is our primary focus on the project.
Okay. A lot of questions. Phone lines are lighting up. One person just dropped off the line, but he wanted a clarification of what the split entails. Now, we're radio, so we can't show maps. But basically, we're talking from where – well, Leslie, just what is the split?
It's the overlap area where I-70 and I-71 are on the same highway. It starts at 315 area, and then it ends when 71 breaks off again, headed northbound. Mm.
So as you're heading north on 71, heading towards the city, just past, for lack of a better reference point, the sewer treatment plant, where 315 breaks off, and then it merges with 70, and then we're just past Broad Street, where they split off again. Well, that's maybe further past Broad Street, I guess.
Well, our study area in Corpus incorporated all the way up to the 670 interchange because that was a logical joining back into other alternates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gas prices. That's a question that Carl wants to ask. Go ahead, Carl. You're on the air.
Well, I'll start by saying I live in Clintonville. There's two places I never take a car, and that's the university and downtown. I always take surface transportation. So why don't we spend money on improving that? Because we will wish we had when gasoline costs $20 a gallon.
I guess the question, we've talked about how ODOT is trying to look at all these things, but where has possible rising gas prices figured into your projections on this traffic flow?
Well, mostly they affect us with our construction cost projections. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of volatility over the past few years as gas prices have been less predictable. We have to add a margin amount into all of our construction estimates to account for this volatility. So it's entirely possible if we can get Project One sold that it will sell for less than we estimate, and we'll be able to use those savings mm-hmm. for the future projects.
But have you projected how much, like if gasoline jumps to $5 a gallon as it was a couple of years ago, fewer cars on the road, smaller cars, Tom Hibbard, the ODOT consultant, where does that come into planning for highways?
Well, you know, gas prices fluctuate, and, you know, it's difficult to predict, you know, what that's going to be in the future. And certainly, you know, there could be some effects or impacts as we go along, you know, but in all of our projections, we did incorporate in the predictions for COTA traffic or, you know, transit traffic and its future growth. So if the transit does grow more, then obviously that takes more pressure off the freeway in the long term. But right now, you know, we are using the best numbers we have available to us, you know, looking ahead into the future.
Great. We're talking about the reconstruction of the I-70-71 split with Leslie Montgomery, the ODOT project manager for the project. The man you just heard is Tom Hibbard. He's an ODOT consultant working on this project. Also, Bill Curlis from the German Village Society, and Chuck Moore from the Old Town East Neighborhood Association. Bill Curlis, you need the split and the exit ramps to help German Village, though. When I go to German Village, generally that's how I get there. I take 70 over and get off on South High Street. So you need the split for German Village, correct?
Absolutely. And let me take this opportunity to make another point, too. ODOT's getting all the blame here and all the responsibility for everything that this freeway system is about. Last evening, we had a chance to talk to Columbus City Council for the first time, and the neighborhoods were able to express some opinions and concerns and ask that City Council and the administration get involved and become the advocates for the neighborhood. And so when we're talking about looking for creative solutions, we're also looking for some creative solutions from the City of Columbus because they are going to inherit all of this above-ground traffic as soon as this project is completed. And I know the city doesn't have any money, but...
Well, they had a tax increase last summer. They got a little more.
They did, but I don't think any of it was designed for highway projects. So I think the city needs to step forward here, too, and take some responsibility and work with the neighborhoods to help us work with ODOT. Remember, ODOT's mission is to make safe streets and convenient streets. That's their only mission. The city is the ones that... are the people who can affect quality of life issues and the concerns that the neighborhoods have. So they also need to step forward here in this process.
And they have a sign-off coming up. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but there is something that the City Council has to approve to help this project go forward, Leslie.
Yes, there is. And we were there at City Council last night hoping to get our consent legislation for Project One. Mm-hmm. I did want to take just 1 second, though, to say that the city really does advocate for the communities. They've worked very diligently with us to try to get their city streetscape plan incorporated by this project, which they have, and accessibility and mobility. They've worked very hard to get us to work on complete streets, to narrow our street widths, and to add more trees. They do advocate for the communities.
Bill, getting back to the split, and it's a vital entry point to German Village, so you can't just cut off the ramps completely.
Absolutely. We are looking at Third Street as our gateway to the German Village, and so we're also very concerned about what those caps are going to look like and whether they're going to be pedestrian and bike-friendly. We also want them very easily accessible. The other concerns that we have are, these unintended consequences. We have concerns, not to get into a lot of details, but we have some concerns that the only streets south out of this new construction plan are going to be High Street and Third Street to get out of the downtown area. Hopefully Front Street, if it's they get that construction down through there completed. So what is that going to mean about traffic flow? Are people going to look to escape this new connector distributor system get off at Greenlawn Avenue, get off at Miller-Kelton, and somehow wind their way through German Village historic brick streets. So those kinds of planning issues are what we're looking for the city for some help in deciding, and from ODOT to make some of those decisions, because it is all about how do you get there.
Okay. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, have there been any incentives explored to get traffic off of 70 so that when people are making that decision whether or not to go downtown or go on to 270, that they take 270?
This was, because one incentive was what, I think it was Tom earlier, said just do away with the whole split. But how about, I mean, the hazardous materials carriers are supposed to go around. What about the other truck traffic that is going through Columbus? Get them to take the north or the south outer belts.
Well, the interstate system was built for commerce, so trucks are free to use whichever routes are the most safe and efficient for them to use. We welcome the economic the economic uses of all the interstate systems, and we would encourage trucks to use the routes that they feel are most efficient. That's part of our funding and our mandate.
Yeah, I know Central Ohio is home to a lot of trucking companies as well. I think just in this area, there's about 100 different trucking companies to be alert to. But, you know, again, the only 30% of the traffic that is going and using I-70 through downtown is really through trips. So everybody else trying to encourage them to go to the outer belt would be more difficult.
Is it defeat the purpose if you're a trucker going from Indianapolis to, say, you know, Wheeling, West Virginia? If you make it easier to go through downtown, does it lessen the incentive for that trucker to use the outer belt to get around the city of Columbus if you widen the roadway?
I think the reality is that they're still using it today. You know, I think, you know, they probably try to adjust their times as far as when they get through to downtown as much as they can. But, you know, certainly there is a level of congestion that at some point when it gets backed up enough, they will divert to the outer belt. But for the most part, that they're there now.
Okay. Chuck Moore, optimistic? What are your 50 years from now when you look at this project?
Oh, 50 years from now, given that I'm 70. Extremely optimistic. There are a lot of things that need to get worked out. These are genuine problems. You know, ODOT needs the lanes. We need the proper interface to the neighborhood. What we need is a land stretcher, which is similar to a carpenter's board stretcher. And we don't have one. So, you know, it's been great working with ODOT. You know, they've met with us 440 times or something like that. I've heard the same speech 440 times. I think I could give it for them if they wanted me to.
We update it a little bit, Dr. Moore.
Leslie Montgomery from ODOT, how much could – we got about 30 seconds, but how much could this project change over the course of the next decade? A lot, or are we pretty set in stone? I mean,
as far as the freeway lanes?
Yeah.
From ODOT's perspective, we're pretty much set in stone. We understand the balance between the quality of life issues and the jobs and progress issues, and we're trying to find the best balance we can.
Okay. Thanks very much to our guest as we discuss the I-70-71 split, project worth watching and a project we're all going to have to deal with over the next 10 to 20 years. I'm Mike Thompson. This has been All Sides on WOSU 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at wosu.org.